Blog Talk Radio.
Time again. This is the No Chaser Show. And I am JT, going solo tonight, because Mac is away, so it's just me and you talking on the airwaves. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. I'll say that again. If you didn't hear me the first time, 347-637-3220 to talk on the No Chaser. Right away, we got a call. This guy, from what I understand, he probably had a tough day. I'm surprised he's calling me right now. But let's bring him in to see if he's even coherent at this time. Welcome there, Mr.
Yes,
Gardner.
Yes, I am coherent. Yes, I am coherent. Mother. Hey, okay, what's going on, JT?
How you doing, my man?
Man, I'm beat down like I was picking cotton in 1820.
You've been doing things. For people that don't know, this is Vic Gardner. He happens to be the owner and operator of the FSP. Brand, I should say. He helped get started all these other programs other than the FSP show, which happens to be the fathership, per se, or the mothership, whatever you want to say. And he happens to be a person that happens to be in the military. And he's been going through some rough times for the last week out of his job description, or for people that are not used to listening or understanding the military jargon, or his MOS. Let me put it this way: his MOS has changed, and the change is slapping him in the face right now, because he happens to be in training, and the Army training, and it's a little rough, to say the least. Am I right in saying that, or I'm overstepping my bounds? Let me know.
No, you're good. You're good, Jerry. You're good. I mean, today was yet another day of the senior leaders getting treated like PSEs. So it is what it is, brother. It is what it is.
Okay.
Did a 5-mile ruck in the morning this morning about 3:30. Just got off of work like 20 minutes ago. So it's been a long day.
Well, I got a question for you. Now I understand at 3:30 in the morning you went on this 5-mile nature walk.
You want to call it a nature walk?
Well, with
35 pounds on my back. Yeah, great nature walk.
And after you did it, whatever amount of time you did it, then you resumed your normal day. Am I right?
Yeah.
Right in assuming that?
Yeah, we went and took showers. Well, we got an hour between
mm-hmm.
the ruck march and having to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And went, took showers, grabbed some quickly, and we went straight to class. And class after class after class in a hot classroom, mind you. I'm here in Maryland, and at 5 something this morning, we were sweating bullets.
I can believe that.
And from there, we've been in class. We took a 35-minute lunch break, and we've been in class ever since, dude.
Now, my question is this. Now, I'm pretty sure you know where I'm going with this, because I've done Army training, I've done things, similar things, and even more intense things than that with hardly any. Excuse me.
I said, trust me. I know. I mean, I was a bidding baby, so I've done more things than this.
Yes. Yes. Same here. Now, my question is this. Now, I'm pretty sure you know where I'm going with this. Now, you did a 30, what is it, a 5-mile work march? Is that what you did, a 5-mile?
Yeah.
30 pounds on your back. Okay. Now, to give you an hour to get yourself together to get back into class, once you get into class and it's a warm classroom, what's the first thing that's going to happen? Pretty much what's going to happen.
Everybody's going to want to fall asleep, but we couldn't. I mean, that's exactly what happened. Everybody was dozing off when we stood up and drank energy drinks and candy and whatnot. And that's what happened to us. Now, what should happen is, I don't know, but it didn't happen that way.
Well, what should happen is what normally would happen. I mean, that's the general course of things. If you see anything that when you have strenuous exercise, and then you have a cool down period, and then you sit in a classroom. And most of these classrooms, I don't know if they do it on purpose, are warm after the fact that you've done some strenuous exercise. It's only human nature. It's only human nature. And it won't take that long. As soon as you settle down and relax, and if it's something, it's not something that really stimulating the mind and keeping your mind active, the first thing you want to do is close your eyes, and your body's going to shut down, trying to shut down, let me put it that way. I mean, I feel for you, man. I feel for you. I don't know how I've been there. I know exactly what you're going through. Trust me.
Well, trust me
when I say that.
I mean, I know, it, but the fact that we've been doing this, I mean, I've been doing this for 8 years, and I already know what this stuff is like. I already know what to expect. I wouldn't expect I would expect for the place that I'm at to treat us like kids, since we are senior. You know, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but think of it this way. When I went to the time I went to OCS, I went through that and then some. So it's part of the program, and to try to humble you to understand what the person that's the lowest rank that you have under you is going through when you drag them through whatever. And have to make that tough decision and unpopular decision. Anyway, let's go on with the show. I just I wanted to talk to you. I haven't talked to you since yesterday on the other show, on the FSP Crew show.
Dude, y'all grilled, dude. I mean, I'm like, geez, what's the dealio?
What do you mean?
God, how they were killing me just because I decided to, you know. To say that the Eagles are looking at possibly being a dynasty. I did say they can be a dynasty, but that's all Michael Vick said. I was trying to get that point across, and now I crucified me for it.
Well, because the simple fact, you can't be a dynasty if you haven't won anything. You shouldn't even come out your mouth, not you, but anybody who says that shouldn't even come out their mouth. Because he hasn't won anything. The Eagles haven't won anything. A ring. They haven't won a ring. Even come out to say we could be a dynasty, well, let me put it this way. Win something, win one, and get a one ring, and then you can say, like it's been said, like I told you before on the other show, that these other teams that won their first Super Bowl, then the media jumped on it all the time, and they talked to him right there, after they won it, and asked whoever they were interviewing, could this be the start of a dynasty? Well, that's the time you start talking about that. It's not the time preseason when you haven't won anything and when you didn't even go get to the playoffs the year before. I understand when you and I have talked about this before, that we had mentioned it before, that the Eagles, in my opinion, have a lot of talent, and a lot of high expectations, and they're going to be a tough out. I expect them to get in the playoffs, and they're going to be a tough out because all the talent they have. To me, it's on both sides of the ball. Maybe it's a little more question on the defensive side, but they got a ton of talent, ton of speed on the offensive side of the board, and I really think they're going to be, like I said, a tough out, and I think we both had agreed upon that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of stuff that we can debate, but the bottom line is this. They are building a franchise to compete for the long haul. And no matter what happens, you know, I think they're headed in that direction of going to the Super Bowl and probably winning one or two within the next 5 to 6 years. Now, will that make them a dynasty? No, but there are a lot of teams that are structured similarly but aren't really, you know, that they don't have the talent. I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
The Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta
mm-hmm.
Falcons it's a team that is structured to be a winning team. They have a solid running game, outstanding passing game. Their defense is okay. Their special teams is good, but they just can't seem to get over that hump. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But they're missing that extra oomph that I think the Eagles have. I mean, I just think they have that extra oomph in there. And, you know, that's all I'm saying. And I can see where Michael Vick got his thought process from. But to spin it forward, because I know you wanted to talk about replacing refs in the Hall of Fame game coming up this Sunday.
How'd you know that?
Dude, I just got off work. Where did I go? Facebook, Slim. Went straight to Facebook.
Oh.
But, yeah, oh. I got to check on my shows now.
Okay.
But anyway, the bottom line is that these refs, they're going to be replacement guys. They're trying to get to the big league. If they do a good enough job, maybe they'll take somebody else's job. And what I mean, what I'm trying to do when I explain both of them, the football and refs thing together, is this. The Eagles last year were the replacement refs. They were a bunch of guys that just got together and they tried to do something throughout the season, and they did do too well. They turned it on at the end. Once this deal with the refs is over with, you know, the regular refs will come back in and take care of business. This year, just like the Heat did their first year, they floundered or they just failed because of it. They thought they were just that good, just like the Eagles did. But this year, they won it all. They dominated. I think the Eagles are in the same boat. That's just the way I feel about it.
Well, you know that the and we could talk about this now because we're talking about it, because this is this Hall of Fame weekend, and I'm going to go over each guy that's in the Hall of Fame that's going to be inducted on tomorrow. But the Hall of Fame game between the Saints and the Cardinals is going to be supposedly done by replacement refs. I don't know. I mean, I played a clip yesterday about what Damaris Smith had said about that. I know you have strong feelings about how Damaris Smith handled the negotiations with the players with the NFL. Also about the possibility it being a safety issue that the players may not play because of the replacement refs. And going on the premise that it could be a safety issue for the players to play with replacement refs.
Mm-hmm.
But you think that the officials, if they play, well, the it's supposedly, it's only 2 days away. So unless something gets settled like in the next 24 hours, they're going to be doing the game, are taking away or threatening the integrity of the game or what?
No, they're not. They're not. This is preseason. This is
wow.
where the NFL normally mixes in their rookie referees. This is normally where they do that. Of course, they go through camps and stuff like that, but they normally have their rookie referees go through the preseason games to see where their deficiencies are and who's going to be working the big games, who's going to work in, you know, the lower games, and da-da-da-da-da. So if I see it as no different. Other than you might not see Ed Hockley. You might not see one of those other cats. But the replacement refs, that just because they replace the refs doesn't mean that they don't have the ability to call an NFL game. I mean, every ref had to start somewhere.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you start there now, and if this prolongs itself throughout, let's say, first 2-3 games of the season, okay, then they'll be fine because the coaches won't be able to say, oh, I know this ref is going to be a hard case on this, or I know this ref is going to be easy dude to work with. It's going to be more the lines of, okay, well, you might have an even playing field because those refs don't have a bias for anybody or one particular team or one particular coach. And again, the preseason is used to assess rookie referees anyway. So I just think it's a much do about nothing. But I also think DeMaurice Smith is being dumb, and I said it last night, but I think he's being dumb if he decides to advise the players to not play because of replacement refs.
Well, let me, and I'm going to read this part of this article because it comes from ProFootballTalk.com, and it's about former NFL VP of Officiating, Mike Pereira, reiterated his view that the situation could threaten the integrity of the game. Pereira, who, as Goodell pointed out, actually took the striped shirt out of mothballs and got back on the field during the 2001 lockout, explained that the decision of Division I conferences to prevent their guys from moonlighting this time around means that the pool of replacements include high school officials, a pair of guys who were fired by the Pac-10 for poor performance, and officials from the Lingerie Football League. As explained by Pereira, the financial gap between the non-lingerie version of pro football and the regular officials works out to $100,000 per team. At a time when the Browns are being sold for $1 billion and the Packers have posted a record profit of more than $40 million, it's hard not to think that the NFL should give. Maybe not the full $100,000 per team, but enough to get this thing done. What do you think about what he said? He's saying that the pool of replacements are high school officials, some guys who were fired from the Pac-10 for poor performance, and officials from the Lingerie Football League. That doesn't sound like qualified guys to me. I don't know what you're thinking, Vic, but that doesn't. And I'm not knocking you. I'm just saying. That doesn't sound like qualified people to me. And that's coming from Mike Pereira, not from some person off the street.
I did not know, I had no knowledge of that interview or that, that interview for Pereira. I mean, that's pretty damning. And the fact that you're getting lingerie league referees is
wow.
Pretty bad, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's right. And I know he's a former head of referees and officials and whatnot. He's a former NFL employee and all that. But he makes a point when it comes to it's $200,000 compared to a multi-billion dollar business or nonprofit.
There you go. Nonprofit, yes.
You know, so a couple $100,000 is – the NFL is not hurting for money. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
They are not hurting for money. If they're hurting for money, then maybe they should think about expanding to England or in Europe anywhere. Maybe they shouldn't go through all these extravagant Super Bowls or special events, you know, if they're that bad for money. A couple hundred thousand dollars keeps the regular faces and the referees that you know are qualified in your league doing their job is paramount when it comes to that. Because, again, my stance wasn't based on anything other than the fact that, you know, the referees are going to sit out there and they're going to get their picket time, they're going to get their money. But to know that you're going to have a laundry league official, you're going to have officials that were fired for poor performance
mm-hmm.
in the Pac-10. You know, the NFL's not the Pac-10. NFL's like SEC. So that's kind of bad. So I think I'm going to take that stance that they need to pay them.
Well, and think about it: say you're the Washington Redskins, you're playing the Philadelphia Eagles or the Dallas Cowboys, two of your hated rivals. Okay, and one of these refs, and this is a regular season game. One of these refs gives you a bad call, and it's an obvious bad call, but because of the ref, that's why you get a call like that. Whereas more than likely you wouldn't get that call from a regular NFL official. Most of the fans, a lot of fans don't seem to care about this anyway, and they probably think that the officials should be thrown out, and it shouldn't be a big deal if the replacement officials get in there. But I'm giving you a scenario that you would get pretty bad out of shape.
I got to step away. I'm going to give you a call back, okay?
Okay. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Right. I'll finish the thought. Go ahead. I'll talk to you.
I'll finish the thought.
You go ahead. I'll finish the thought, and then I'll go from there. Don't worry about it. What I'm saying is this. You as a fan, whatever your favorite team is, now they have in a regular season, they've gone through the preseason using refs that are questionable in being able to be competent, okay? Probably had some controversial calls, some calls that a normal NFL ref wouldn't make, but they've made them in the preseason. Some fans still don't care, still think that it's going to be all right. As soon as they get a few preseason games under the belt, it's going to be better when in the regular season. Well, comes the regular season, this isn't the solve. You have the same refs that you would have in the preseason. You have replacement refs that, like I'm telling you, like, and this is from Mike Pereira, who used to be a NFL VP of officiating. So, and this is a guy, if you watch on TV, it's a few times that he's on Fox giving you calls that refs make. And he's either reaffirming them or he's saying that he made the wrong call. So I'm giving you a credible person here that knows refereeing, that's saying that the replacements that they're using are guys that got fired from the Pac-10 for poor performance, or high school officials, or officials from the lingerie football league. And I think I got Mr. Gardner back here. You back now? You okay?
Yeah. I had to do some.
Whatever. Don't make it. Whatever. Don't make a difference. No. And I'll finish my thought. I just got. I'll set it up to get to the part I'm saying. In a crucial game, it could be middle of the season. It could be near the end of the season against a division rival, which division games are always crucial. And at a crucial time in the game, a call that is normally not made by an NFL official, but it's going to be made by a replacement official, a lingerie league official, makes a call against your team. Okay? And I'm going to even and bump it up a little bit more. He makes a call against your team, and within the play, that it should have been roughing the passer, RG3 gets put out the game. He gets put out the game. And wait a minute. Instead of getting a roughing the passer, you get no call. It's an obvious call. The official was standing right there next to RG3 when the guy hit him late, put him out the game, and it's late in the game. They're driving to go for the go-ahead touchdown. Now, RG3's out of the game. The replacement quarterback comes in the game. He throws an interception, and the Redskins lose against either Cowboys or the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, those fans that didn't care, didn't think it was a big deal, thought the officials, regular officials, that should have been thrown out in the first place because they're getting greedy, they're asking for too much money, are now want to lynch, and I hate to say it like this, but want to actually do bodily harm to this official that's not a normal NFL official. Then their whole scope and whole idea of replacement officials is going to change. Am I right in assuming that?
For some people, I mean, think about it. You set up a perfect storm, which I hope never happens. Mm-hmm. But if it does, it does.
It could happen.
It could. But my whole thought process is, I think Mr. Lingerie Official is going to get criticized because he's a lingerie official. He'll get criticized because he's a replacement ref. And the fact that he ref in a lingerie league will then come up. But I honestly don't think that it's a good... I don't think it's a good thing to blast him then because it sucks balls. I mean, good Lord, I forgot I'm on the air. It sucks badly. it sucks badly.
That's
for,
okay.
You know,
there's no chaser, man. This is just straight talk here.
it sucks badly for him because then it becomes, well, he's a lingerie league referee. What do you expect? You know, and you might get that from a lot of fans. You might even get it from Shanahan, and you might get it from others. But the fact that it happened means that it can happen with any ref. So if you recall, okay, and I don't think they had this thing at the this penalty back in the early 80s when Joe Theismann got crushed. You know, Lawrence Taylor broke his leg and put him out forever.
The rules were different.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is that when you look at these types of situations, the referee could have threw a flag because he pretty much hit the quarterback over by the top and near his neck and near his helmet and things of that nature. So, therefore, he could have called a flag. Because you can't tackle in that area.
Well, like I said, the rules were different back in the day. And a lot of things were accepted back in those days versus the way it is now, where you can't tackle
you.
The guy below the knees or whatever. You can't even come close to that. And then you can't hit the guy up in the neck area from the neck on up. So,
the deal is this. Bottom line is this. You've got a bunch of guys that are going to come in and be replacement referees, and you can't sit here and say just because he was fired from the Pac-10, it's because he refed in the lingerie league that, you know, it's a bad call or a bad no call. It's going to be a bad call, bad no call, whether they're in a regular NFL referee or a lingerie one. But the experience is a factor. But look, I'm in the vehicle with one of my classmates. I got to let you do this show by yourself, finish the show by yourself. And I will check the archives to make sure you got my numbers where I need them to be. You know.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Whatever. Just have a good dinner or whatever, all right?
No. I got to go get some stuff for tomorrow. I will not be on the show tomorrow.
Okay.
Looks like I'm going to be building a house, so I know I'm not going to make the show. But I will be on the show on Sunday.
No problem.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. FSP is leaving the building. And, Jerry, don't hurt the listeners.
What?
don't hurt the listeners with all that jargon, all that blah, 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 Houston Texans just blah, 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 just that. Don't do it.
Have a good one.
All right, dude.
Take care. Later. Bye. Anyway, like I was saying, people, besides coming down hard on the ref immediately because he's right in front of you, the next step after that is going to come down on the league because I'm just leaving you one scenario. This scenario could happen three or four times on the same weekend, if not more on the weekend, because of the inexperience and the talent level of the refs that are replacing the normal NFL refs. So if you think that the refs don't have a legitimate gripe, if you think and you're an NFL fan and you root hard for your team, understand this. Fans, I'm saying to you this. Call your teams up. Tell them to get the regular NFL officials in there because you don't want to take the chance. Each game is very important. Each play is very important in each game. If it takes one game to knock out your key guy, it takes one play to knock out your key guy. It can take one play or one game to knock out your favorite team from getting into the playoffs. So understand that. The talent level, and I'm taking this from Mike Pereira, who I definitely respect, is well below par of what an NFL official is going to be. I understand that you have beef with the NFL officials. Some may say that the NFL officials will be make bad calls all the time. What's going to be the difference between a bad call from an NFL official versus one of these replacement officials? Well, all depends on what the call is, for one, and also it's more of a risk with a replacement official because he's not used to the speed and pace of an NFL game versus a high school game or a college game or lingerie football league game, and it's more of a risk for him to blow a call over and over again because of the experience factor, because of the intimidation factor of being on the field when NFL players versus players of lower caliber or lower skill level. So understand what I'm saying here. I'm not in favor of replacement officials. The league is definitely trying to flex its muscle. Well, it is flexing its muscle, first with the players and now with the NFL officials. It's not right. It's definitely not right. These guys work hard for the money. I understand they get calls wrong. Everybody, it's the human factor, people. These people, there's a people factor in here. They're not robots. So what are you thinking that? Because what's the difference between the NFL and one of these lingerie officials making a bad call? Well, a bad call is a bad call is a bad call. But it's the level of the bad call, and it like I said, it could depend on what kind of bad call it is. If it's a bad call and you're one of your players, key players, gets knocked out of the game, and maybe out for the season. You can't prevent it from getting out of the season, but if it's knocked out of the game and the call's not made because it was an illegal hit, and if an official either froze up, didn't know the rule, or whatever, whereas an NFL official would have known the rule and would be able to throw the flag, then that's a problem. That would be a problem for me, and I'm pretty sure it would be a problem for a lot of diehard fans that are cheering relentlessly for their team in the stadium, and wanted to do, like I said, do bodily harm to an official, and then after that, come down on the league for the fact is they're the ones that hire these replacement officials. So think about that when you next time you see a replacement official on Sunday on the Hall of Fame game, which is the first game in the preseason for the Hall of Fame ceremonies that are taking place starting tonight. Whereas the six players that I'm going to be naming off are going to get inducted into the Hall of Fame on Saturday, which is going to be coverage begins at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and exclusively on the NFL Network. The ceremony starts at 7 o'clock. So there's 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. I imagine they're probably going to preview, and I'm going to be talking about these guys, previewing the guys that are going to go into the Hall of Fame. Five of these guys I know because they played, and I'm familiar with all these guys, and especially one that I really have a lot of respect for. So I'm going to go through these guys, and one by one, and explain to you who these guys are and what kind of accomplishments they have. And then I'm going to tell you a little thing about these guys that they all have in common, which until I read it, I didn't realize it, but it is true. First of all, I'm talking about an old-school guy. This guy played for the, it was a defensive back for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was coming out of St. Bonaventure. He played both offensive and defensive end. He was an undrafted free agent in 1951. That was even before I was born. He was converted from a defensive back. He was converted to a defensive back by the Steelers. And he also played a receiver for the team also. He had five interceptions during his rookie campaign. In his second year, he had seven interceptions. And he led the Steelers in picks five times during his career. He had a career-high nine interceptions in 1953. Four of those came in one game against, I wish Vic was on here, against the Washington Redskins. He had 25 career interceptions during his first four seasons, but he never reached the Pro Bowl until 1955. And ironically, that's the season, and the only season, or the first season, I should say, he failed to record a single interception. He even had two interceptions in the 1955 Pro Bowl game. In 1957, he had 10 interceptions. That was a career high, and that was also tied for the league lead. And then in 1958, he had nine interceptions. In 1959, he broke a leg, and he was forced to retire in 1959. So 103 games, he had 52 interceptions. 52 interceptions, and he returned four for touchdowns. He also had four touchdown receptions, recovered one fumble recovery for a score. He's one of the NFL's all-decade team of the 1950s. I'm talking about Jack Butler from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's move on to the next one, and he also happens to be a Pittsburgh Steeler. And I'm talking about Dermonte Dawson, a center for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a second-team All-SEC selection at Kentucky and a fourth-round pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1988. He played five of eight games during his rookie season at right guard. Dawson missed part of his rookie season with an injury. In 1989, he moved to center to replace the Mike Webster, Mike Webster is a retired legend and a future Hall of Famer. Dawson received high praise when he was selected as the co-AFC Offensive Lineman of the Year by the Players Association in 1933. Like I said, he was the co-offensive lineman of the year, along with Richmond Webb. He was also selected as the Offensive Lineman of the Year in 1996. He was selected as first-team All-Pro for six consecutive years from that started in 1996. He was selected to play in seven consecutive Pro Bowls from 1993 to 1999. He started 170 consecutive games before he had to miss because of a hamstring injury in 1999. He was the anchor of an offensive line that led the Steelers to five AFC Central Division titles, as well as Super Bowl 30. I'm talking about, like I said, the soon-to-be Hall of Famer, Dermonte Dawson. Let's go to this other guy, Purple People Eater, for lack of a better word. I'm talking about the defensive end from the Minnesota Vikings, Chris Stolman. He was from the University of Pittsburgh and was highly touted as the fourth overall selection in 1985 draft. He was picked as a linebacker by the Minnesota Vikings but moved to defensive end for the final three games in 1986 season. Stolman immediately responded to his position change with a team-high 11 sacks in 1987. It was the first of six sack titles for the Vikings, and it earned him all NFL honors and his first trip to the Pro Bowl. Stolman's final season came in 1989 when he notched 21 sacks, one shy of the single-season record at the time. He was selected as the 1992 NFC Defensive Player of the Year, after he recorded 14.5 sacks, six forced fumbles, and a safety. He even intercepted a pass for a touchdown. He retired with the career-high 150.5 career sacks, fourth on the all-time list at the time. He had eight seasons with at least 10 sacks, third most of all time. He was selected to eight Pro Bowls. He was the first All-Pro. He was the first team All-Pro in 1987, 1989, and 1992, and first team All-NFC four times. He is a member of the NFL's All-Decade team of the 1990s. I'm talking about Chris Stolman. Okay? Let's move on to another guy. This guy is from the U. That was recruited or helped recruited to the U by Michael Irvin. He started his career at a community college, Northwest Mississippi Community College, before he transferred to the U. Seattle Seahawks selected him with the third pick selection into 1990 NFL draft after he put up All-American season at University of Miami. Cortez Kennedy made an impact immediately with the Seahawks in 1990, and he was selected first-team All-Rookie. He played in 167 of a possible 176 games, which his streak ended of 116 consecutive games played and a record 100 consecutive games started. Kennedy set a club record with eight Pro Bowl selections during his career. He was also first or second team All-Pro five times. He was selected 1992 Defensive Player of the Year, even though his team in 1992 had a record of 2-14. Now, how often does that happen? The Defensive Player of the Year is picked from a team that's 2-14. He had 14 sacks and four forced fumbles that year. You know, he had to be at 1992, he had to be an absolute stud, standout, to be picked from a 2-14 team. In 1999, he notched 6.5 sacks and two interceptions. More importantly, he was the anchor of the defense as the Seahawks reached the playoffs for the first time since 1988. He had 58 sacks, intercepted 3 passes, and scored a touchdown on a fumble recovery during his career. He twice led the team in sacks and was selected to the NFL's All-Decade Team for the 1990s. I'm talking about the big man, number 96 out of Seattle, Cortez Kennedy, a beast. This guy here, now I am a running back. I love running backs, as you people on other shows that have listened to me, and I've talked about running backs before. I love running backs, and this guy happened to be one of my favorite running backs when he was playing. I used to be a New York Jet fan. I'm no longer a Jet fan, Curtis Martin used to be on the New York Jets under the tutelage of Bill Parcells. And this guy reeks of class. Even though he was drafted with the 3rd-round pick by the New England Patriots in the 1995 draft, I still like this guy. During his rookie season with the Patriots, he ran 30 yards on his first NFL carry and finished the game with 102 rushing yards and a touchdown against the Cleveland Browns. In his rookie year, Martin had 9 100-yard rushing games, tying a rookie record. Martin finished his rookie season as the AFC's leading rusher with 1,487 yards and 14 touchdowns. But as a result of that, he was selected as the NFL Rookie of the Year. He had 10 consecutive 1,000-yard rushing seasons games during his he had 10 consecutive seasons of 1,000 rushing yards. He and Barry Sanders are the only runners ever to start their career with 10 consecutive 1,000 rushing yards. I'm telling you, this guy's a class act on and off the field. After 3 standout seasons with the Patriots, Martin made shocking news because, if anybody knows the history, the Patriots and the Jets don't like each other. And he chose to sign a contract with the New York Jets in 1998, which reunited him with his former coach, who used to coach for the Patriots that went to the Jets, Bill Parcells. Martin rushed for 1,287 yards and scored 9 total touchdowns during his first season with the Jets. More importantly, the new-look Jets reached the AFC title game. Okay, Martin had what was easily his best season in 2004 when he posted a career-high 1,697 yards and won his lone NFL rushing title. He also tied a career-high by registering 9 games with at least 100 yards rushing. He retired as NFL's fourth leading rusher all time with 14,101 yards, 90 touchdowns. His 17,421 combined net yards ranked him 10th all time. He was a first or second team All-Pro in 1999, 2001, 2004. I'm talking about the man with number 28, New England Patriot, and ended his career as a New York Jet. Mr. Classy himself, Curtis Martin. And last but not least, from the Show Me State, I'm talking about the number 77, William Rolfe, tackle from Kansas City Chiefs, who played college football at Louisiana Tech, and he didn't have to travel far after New Orleans Saints selected him 8th overall in the 1993 NFL draft. He was the first lineman taken. Rolfe started all 16 games at right tackle and did not miss an offensive snap during his first season, earning all rookie honors. The following year, Rolfe switched to left tackle and was voted to the first of 11 Pro Bowls. He was also named First Team All-Pro and All-NFC and was the NFL Players Association NFC Offensive Lineman of the Year for the first of 2 consecutive seasons. He played 9 seasons in New Orleans. He started 131 regular season games and 2 playoff games. He participated in the franchise's first ever postseason win, a 31-28 victory over the defending Super Bowl champions, St. Louis Rams, in 2000 NFC wildcard game. Unfortunately, and I remember this, and I thought this was a mistake for the New Orleans Saints, but they traded him to the Kansas City Chiefs in 2002 after he played just 7 games in the previous season. He regained his form in Kansas City and kicked off a stretch of 3 all-pro seasons for the Chiefs. He was a key part of the Kansas City's offensive line, helping the Chiefs lead the NFL in points scored in 2002 and 2003. The team also led the AFC in total yards in 2003 and the NFL in 2004 and 2005. He was named first-team All-Pro 7 times from 1994 to 1996, 2000, 2003 to 2005, All-NFC 6 times, and All-AFC 3 times. Rofe is a member of 2 of the NFL's All-Decade teams from the 1990s and the 2000s. This guy is serious. I'm talking about the offensive tackle, William Rofe. That's a hell of a class going into the Hall of Fame. The 6 men officially entered the Hall of Fame on Saturday have one thing in common. This is what I wanted to say after I named and talked about all of these. Apart from the fact that they played football at the Pro Bowl level, because they all got to the Pro Bowl at least once, and that's what makes them to the Hall of Fame. All 6 of these guys have no Super Bowl rings among them. And that's the first time in 30 years that a new class of Hall of Fame, this Hall of Fame class, doesn't have one ring. The last time that happened was, and that's ironically, 30 years ago, in 1982, the four-man group of Doug Atkins, George Musso, Sam Huff, and Merlin Olsen in 1992. Entered the Hall of Fame without a Super Bowl ring among them. Ever since then, at least one member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame had at least one ring. Now, of the group that's going into the Hall of Fame, Dawson and Martin, Damani Dawson and Curtis Martin played in a Super Bowl. Dawson's Steelers in Super Bowl 30. Who lost to the Cowboys, and Martin's Patriots in Super Bowl 31, who lost to the Packers. And that's ironic because these two guys are going to the Hall of Fame together, and they played back-to-back Super Bowl. Damani in Super Bowl 30 and Curtis Martin in Super Bowl 31, and both of them lost in consecutive Super Bowls. The Patriots lost to the Packers. And like I told you before, The Hall of Fame ceremony is supposed to take place at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, exclusively on the NFL Network, where you see all 6 of these guys. Some of them may be your favorite players. Some of them may be of your favorite team. You can see them get inducted to the Hall of Fame, and the speech follows. All right, let's talk about something else I want to talk about, okay? And I got about 6 minutes left in the show, and I think this will probably be running out from there. Yesterday, Roger Goodell, or thereabouts, within the last couple of days, Roger Goodell and Damaurus Smith, troubled by the large number of players arrested this year, recently met with the NFL's Players Association Executive Director Damaurus Smith to try to come up with a solution. Goodell told CBSSports.com that he met with Smith last week, hoping to agree on measures with the Players Union to address the increasing number of arrests, especially involving drunken driving and domestic violence cases. Now, there's more drunken driving cases than there are domestic violence cases, and I'm not downplaying one over the other. It's just that There was been a rash of DUIs or DWIs, whatever you want it to be, that are coming out since the first of the year that NFL players that have been getting arrested for. This is a quote from Goodell. We're going to do some things to combat this problem because some of the numbers on DUIs and domestic violence are going up, and that disturbs me, end quote. Quote, there's a pattern of mistakes. Something has to change. And I know this because I did a show on this or talked about this on the FSP Crew show, which was at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time every Thursday. And we did a show maybe 2 weeks ago about that, talked about the number of arrests, and I even named each arrest and who got arrested and when they got arrested. There have been over 30 arrests of active NFL players in 2012, with over half involving alcohol or drug charges. You know, what the hell's going on? These guys have too much time on their hands. Seems like it happens only when in the off season, for the most part, when these guys don't have any kind of structure. You probably think they need structure in their lives to get them out of, keep them out of trouble. And Goodell says he hopes to make existing substance abuse and player conduct policies even stronger. You know, he just discussed this with the union. You can see this is an ongoing problem that's not getting any better. It's getting, looks like it's getting worse. So he wants to try to clean it up and tighten it up before before it really, I mean, not to say it's not out of hand now, before, you know, there's a growing trend that's getting worse, and he wants to be able to try to curb it. I don't know how you're going to curb guys in their off time, how you're going to do that. Make the penalties that much more stringent. Maybe that'll curb them, but, you know, these guys know how Goodell is, and they still do the same things over and over again. So I don't know what's going to curb them. Hopefully, through more education and peers seeing their guys seeing their peers getting busted over and over and seeing them getting penalized harshly from Goodell will kind of curb it. You guys got to do something because it's not getting any better. These young guys, money, got time to burn and burn in the worst way, getting behind the wheel when they can make an 800 number or they can call anybody and have them take their keys, or they could have somebody drive them, pick them up and drive them. They all have access to different ways of getting themselves back home if they have over party themselves. Anyway, it's about 2 minutes left in the show. I want to thank Vic for calling in. Tune in tomorrow. We're going to have an hour and a half show starting at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It's an FSP crew show. FSP show. It's our college preview. Black's going to be the man. I'll be co-hosting. There's going to be a very informative about the college football front. I think you're going to get a lot of knowledge out of that. Black, I know you may be listening. Type in who your other co-host is going to be so I know. His name escapes me at the minute. So besides Black and myself being on it, we're going to have another a special guest that's also going to drop the knowledge on the college football front. We're going to have be listening to some interviews from coaches and I think some players. We're also going to be going, like I said, through the college football. Adrian Lee is going to be on board also to give you the information about the college on the college front. So it's an hour and a half show. Trust me, you want to listen to this show. It's going to give you a lot of knowledge of what's going to take place in the college football front. That's 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And then after that, if you are a fantasy football player, tune in on 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. it'll be the master plan. And we talked about running backs 2 weeks ago. Last week we talked about wide receivers. This week we're going to be talking about tight ends, all for fantasy. It's fantasy football season time. Sunday it will be the before the Hall of Fame game with the Cardinals and the Saints. From like I said, this is JT. This is the No Chaser Show, and we're out of here. Have a good night.